In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 9 and 10, Paul, in a meeting with Peter and John and then James, the Lord's brother, are in Jerusalem, and Paul says that these men gave to me the right hand of fellowship so that we, Paul and the other missionaries, might go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised or to the Jews. They only asked us to remember the poor, the very thing I was also eager to do. That's what this lesson is about, is remembering the poor. This is actually a request by one of you, but something I have been thinking in my own mind for some time is a lesson really dealing with the poor. This particular lesson is not to define who the poor are. I do want to talk about that. We're going to talk about that next week. Rather, our focus in this lesson is just to remember them. And I think it's timely, don't you? We are in a season where everyone is already thinking about giving and thinking about giving to those who are in need and so on. Also, in our recent classes, we have gone through a lot, said a lot on gratitude, and this is kind of an indirect approach to that. If you're grateful for what God has given you, you express that gratitude by sharing with others. It's part of your expression of gratitude. But Jesus did say in John chapter 12, verse 8, that the poor will always be with us. And that means that the poor will be among believers as well as unbelievers. And it's just a fact of life. It is a way of the world. It is a part of any society. It is a part of any economy. Amid any sizable human population, there will be a segment called the poor. The question is, what is our responsibility to the poor? And is that responsibility individual or is it collective? In other words, is it something you take care of personally or is it just something that we give to the church and the church takes care of that themselves? And then how do we remember the poor? In what manner do we do so? And I have to tell you that this lesson cannot possibly address this entire subject. But my intention here really is to bring this subject to your awareness. And it's not my job to solve the problem. It's not my responsibility to make decisions for this group or to tell you what to do with your money. It is my job as a preacher of the gospel to tell you, however, to remember the poor. I want to start in the Old Testament because the Old Testament is filled with passages about the poor and the needy among Israel. And God holds those who are not poor responsible for helping to take care of them. His point is, do not neglect those among you who are poor or in need, or I will enter into judgment on their behalf. Now, it's important that we establish this point up front. First of all, you are to help those people. He never says you are to be fully responsible for them. And that's something that our society needs to hear, is that yes, we have poor among us, but that doesn't mean that we are all supposed to give of our means to those people and they are supposed to not be responsible for their own selves. In fact, in some cases, responsible for what got them into their poverty in the first place. There is a responsibility on both sides. And what we're simply looking at right now is our responsibility to them. In the next lesson, I'm going to talk more about their responsibility for themselves and to the Lord. But under the law of Moses, if an Israelite became poor through circumstances beyond his control, then a fellow Israelite who was related to him could take him into his home, or another Israelite could hire him as an indentured servant. But he was to do so with dignity and respect. In other words, this man or his family were not to be treated as slaves or sold by slaves, which is very common among the heathen nations at that time. And he was not to be treated with severity or with contempt, but as a fellow countryman in need. And when that person finished his servitude, he was not to be sent away empty-handed. But, and I quote, "You shall furnish him liberally from your flock and threshing floor and wine vat. You shall give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you." That's from Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 13 and 14. In fact, Deuteronomy 15 has a lot to say on God's warning Israel not to close their hearts to those who are in poor, who are in need or who are poor among them. And there's no contradiction here. I know the section in verse 4 starts out, "There will be no poor among you," and then later it says, "And if there are poor among you," and you might look at that and go, "Well, which is it?" Well, what God is saying in essence is, any who are poor among you will not be poor for long because you are so blessed that you'll be able to take care of them. And I expect you to do that, is really what he's saying there. So as you discover these people, or as you see their need, or as they come to you for help, then you are to help them, is really what's going on there. In the book of Proverbs, maybe surprisingly, actually has some insight on the attitude toward the poor. Just go through some of these briefly here. He who despises his neighbor sins, but happy is he who is gracious to the poor. Just think about the idea there, the principle of the thought there. He who mocks the poor taunts his maker. He who rejoices at calamity will not go unpunished. In other words, we're not supposed to be pointing fingers at those who are poor and saying, well, they must be unrighteous people because after all, they're poor. And making such accusations as that. He who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. That's pretty telling, isn't it? Like, your prayers will be hindered themselves if you shut your heart toward those in need. When your need arises, God won't be listening to you if indeed you're not listening to others' needs, is another way of saying that. The rich and poor have a common bond. The Lord is the maker of them all. The poor people, whoever they are, whenever they are, they are not lesser human beings because they are poor, but they are still created in the image of God, is really what that is expressing there. The righteous is concerned for the rights of the poor. The wicked does not understand such concern. And isn't that telling? And isn't that something that you should think about as a Christian? We should be concerned because that's part of being righteous. And therefore, that's something that we should be involved in and concerned about. And in the passage on the so-called worthy woman in Proverbs 31, verse 20, a worthy woman extends her hand to the poor and she stretches out her hands to the needy. So a worthy woman is one who does not forget the poor and the hungry and the helpless. Israel was told to leave food in their fields and their orchards and their vineyards and their groves for the poor to harvest on their own. And that's something significant in itself. It's a couple passages to bring that out because he says it just in these words. Now, when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap the very corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. Nor shall you glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather the fallen fruit of your vineyard, nor you shall leave them instead for the needy and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Leviticus 19, verse 9 and 10. And then in Deuteronomy 24, starting in verse 19, when you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten the sheaf in the field, you're not to go back to get it. It shall be for the alien, in other words, the stranger among you, for the orphan and for the widow, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive tree, which is the way that they got the olives out of the tree, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, the same thing. So there's a very distinct, very clear understanding that your harvest is a blessing that God has given to you for your purpose. But don't be so greedy that you get every single bit of the harvest and not leave anything for anyone else, because God has blessed others through your harvest, is really what is being said here. And if you take care of the poor, then God will take care of you. I think that's also implied in this, don't you think? God's judgment against Israel and Judah is partly due to the inhumane treatment of the poor. We have a number of passages on this. I selected just a few. Isaiah 3, verse 14 and 15. The Lord enters into judgment with the elders and the princes of his people and says, "It is you who have devoured the vineyard. The plunder of the poor is in your houses." In other words, you stole from them and now it's in your coffers, in your treasures. What do you mean by crushing my people and grinding the face of the poor, declares the Lord God of hosts. Well, here's God rising up in judgment on behalf of those who have been neglected. Remember, he promised he would do that, and he would speak for them. He would be an advocate for them. Isaiah 10, verse 1 and 2, "Woe to those who enact evil statutes and to those who constantly record unjust decisions so as to deprive the needy of justice and rob the poor of my people of their rights, so that the widows may be their spoil and that they may plunder the orphans." Now, this is a little different slant on abuse of the poor. Now here, they're not just being neglected or unfed. Now they're being deprived of their rightful justice. In other words, a poor person comes into a court against a rich person, and the rich person always wins because he's rich. And the poor person is expendable. And God says that is wrong. And there's a curse upon Israel for that very thing. Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom, God says to Judah. And she and her daughters had arrogance, abundant food, and careless ease, but she did not help the poor and needy. That is a frightening passage to me, because that says a lot about America today. If you think about it, that we are a nation of prosperity and abundant food and careless ease, but if we're not paying attention to those who are in need, what happened to Judah? Do you know your history? Judah was carried off into exile because of crimes such as this. We need to be very careful to learn from history and not to repeat it. The people of the land of Judah have practiced oppression and committed robbery, and they have wronged the poor and needy and have oppressed the sojourner without justice. Ezekiel 22, verse 29. I mean, there's a number of passages here that talk about God's criticism, not just about neglecting to feed the poor, but also withholding this justice. And so God says that, in essence, he promises numerous times that he's going to serve as an advocate for the poor, for the needy, the orphan, and the widow. In other words, those who are helpless to defend themselves, sometimes helpless to feed themselves. God will rise up as their advocate. Psalm 68, verse 5 says that God will be a father to the fatherless and a judge for the widows. God will rise up and defend them. And then Zechariah chapter 7, verse 9 and 10, I think there's a good summation of this whole thought. The Lord of hosts has said, dispense true justice and practice kindness and compassion each to his brother. And do not oppress the widow or the orphan, the stranger or the poor. And do not devise evil in your hearts against one another. That's a good summary. God's expectation of all the Israelites, that they had moral obligations. And those moral obligations, by the way, are consistent in every covenant that God makes with people, because they're moral. And when we talk about morality or morals, what we're really talking about is that which is consistent with the nature of God himself. And so it's not surprising that we see these same instructions or these same expectations in any covenant. So I could go on. There's a lot of passages. We would be here all day if we were to cite them all and discuss them all. But my point here has been made that God has much to say on this subject. And we're told in Romans chapter 15, verse 4, that these things were written for our instruction. In other words, they're not just random things that God decided to say and they happen to be in an ancient textbook. And then we kind of read over them and go, huh, that's interesting. But rather that they are to instruct us as to what kind of people we should be who are also in covenant with God. And we could say that to forget or neglect the poor is indicative of a careless disregard for those who are in need, and it also indicates a very self-absorbed lifestyle. I want you to remember the rich man in Luke 16 that we had a lesson on a couple months ago. Remember, the rich man was rich, and he wasn't faulted because he was rich. He was faulted because here's Lazarus, a poor man, at his gate, and the rich man virtually had to step over Lazarus to get into his house and never did a single thing for this poor man. Even though he was a fellow Jew, a fellow Israelite, a fellow covenant keeper, like the rich man claimed to be anyway, and he did nothing. Remember what happened to the rich man. And furthermore, we can also say to remember the poor means more than just to go, yeah, there's poor people out there. That's a shame. Okay, let's eat, you know, or something like that. It's more than just thinking about them. To remember the poor means to take action on their behalf. Remember what all the times in the Old Testament where God says, and he remembered his covenant? It didn't mean like God was pondering and going, oh yeah, we have a covenant. I almost forgot. That's not what that means. The expression actually means that God acted in response to his covenant. And so when you are asked to remember the poor, it's not just to have the poor be brought to your attention. It is actually to respond to them in something that is active and demonstrable or demonstratable, if you want. Hebrews 13, verse 3 is a passage you don't have in your notes, if you want to write that in there. The writer there says, remember the prisoners as though in prison with them, and those who are ill-treated. This is actually a reference to Christians who are in prison because of their faith, not just a bunch of people in prison because they stole or robbed a bank or whatever. These are fellow Christians, and he says to remember the prisoners. Now, how do you suppose they're to remember those people? How do you suppose we're to remember those who are in prison for their faith? Are we supposed to just send a sentiment their way? Maybe a Hallmark card? Something like that? Maybe just give them a passing thought? Or are we supposed to actually take care of them and visit them? Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 25 to those who were deemed righteous, the sheep on his right? And he says, when I was in prison, you visited me. He doesn't say, you just thought about me. You did something. So to remember the poor, just as with remembering the prisoners, means to take action. Why would Jesus say things like that? Well, because Jesus himself did not come into the world as a wealthy man, but as a poor child born into a peasant family. And he was not surrounded with comfort and riches and fine clothing, but he actually lived a difficult life, especially difficult in comparison to our relatively convenient and comfortable lives. Even if you're living in hardship, you're probably living with more comfort and ease and more conveniences than Jesus ever had in his life. In Luke chapter 9, verse 57 and 58, here's a telling point here. It says that as they were going along the road, someone said to him, I will follow you wherever you go. And I want you to think about what's implied in that statement there. Jesus is claiming to be a king, or is coming in the manner of a king. And so these people are following him. At least some of them are following him, say, hey, if I'm friends with the king, I'm going to get a good spot in the kingdom. James and John actually came to him and asked that later on. Well, we want to sit on one side or the other of you. And so there is that idea. And Jesus responds and says, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. In other words, what he's saying is, don't think that you following after me is a route to glory and ease and comfort in this life. Look at me. The animals have better shelter or better circumstances than I have. And I'm the king. So you shouldn't expect yourselves, not the kings, to expect better than that. It's just not a route to earthly wealth. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9, Paul says as much, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. Christ left behind all the glory of heaven, a wealth or a rich life that is simply beyond human comprehension. And yet, if we adopt his heart and adopt his mission, someday we will share in that riches and in that glory. In fact, I will go so far as to say that we are rich already if we have fellowship with God. We are far wealthier than anyone else who was outside of Christ. And Jesus said in Acts chapter 20, verse 35, at least it's quoted there by Paul, he says, it is better to give than to receive. That was Jesus' heart and mission. If you want to follow Jesus, that has to be your heart and your mission as well. It is better to give than to receive. I think it's safe to say that our attitude toward the poor says a lot about our love for people in general. Because you can't say, well, I just care deeply about people, if indeed you refuse to and neglect those who are looked down upon and cannot repay you. And that's what Jesus is getting at in some of these passages here, such as in Matthew chapter 5, verse 46, where he says, if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Even the tax collectors do that. Even the Gentiles do that. Even those who are heathens and unbelievers do that. So how does that make you special? He wants you to show love to those who won't repay you. Show love to those who are not your friends and family, those who are outside of your circle, so to speak. And in Luke chapter 14, verse 12 through 14, he says, you know, when you have a feast, or when you throw a feast or have a banquet of some kind, don't just invite your friends and your family and those who will repay you, but invite the lame, the blind, the crippled, those who cannot repay you as well, and you will be blessed in the kingdom of heaven. So that's exactly what he was telling Israel, wasn't it? If you provide for those who are in need, God will bless you. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to get a check in the mail just because you did that, but it does mean God's going to take care of you. We've got to believe that. That's powerful because this thought strikes at the natural tendency of human nature, which is to keep what you have and not give because you don't want to let go of what you have. So there's a real strong message there for us. And I want to turn our attention to whose responsibility is it to remember the poor. I'm just going to answer this directly up front. In my opinion, as I understand the scriptures, the answer is quite simple. It is yours and mine. We do have examples of the early church giving money and benevolence to the poor. Acts 4 is a classic example there in verse 32 through 37 where the early church is in need, and there's a lot among them who are in need. And we have people selling off things and property and bringing the proceeds and laying it at the apostles' feet. I get that. I see that. I can read that too. But understand the context. First of all, we have Christians giving specifically for that purpose. And secondly, the poor in question there are not the poor in all of society. They are the Christians themselves. So if you're asking yourself, whose responsibility is it to deal with the poor, specifically, we're going to deal with those who are Christians, and the church can help in dealing with Christians. But the church is limited to dealing with Christians and not dealing with all the rest of the poor who are out there. The real responsibility for taking care of the poor or the saints are fellow Christians and not the church as a separate entity or a separate institution. The church is simply a legitimate vehicle for dealing with this situation. It's not intended to remove responsibility from the individual. In the New Testament, for example, virtually every passage that gives instruction about showing love to others and especially to fellow believers, is directed at the individual believer, not at the church. I hope you understand what I just said. The church cannot show love for you. The church cannot remember the poor for you. And the church cannot do good for you, instead of you, in your place. There are some things that we as a collective organization, a church, can do. We can teach, we can edify, we can support widows who are in need. We're told that in 1 Timothy 5. We can pay elders, we can pay ministers, we can support missionaries. Those are things that we can do collectively, and those are all good things. But what the church does with its collected money is limited to the specific New Testament pattern. What you do with your money is only limited by basically two things. What is right and what is in your heart? Think about that. You have more latitude, personally, than the church does with dealing with the poor as a general subject. And I say all this because there is a great tendency among churchgoers, and I'm using that word broadly here, to abdicate their own responsibility in remembering the poor. In their minds, putting a check in the plate takes care of everything. I put the check in the plate. I'm going to let the church take care of who the poor are and when they need to be taken care of and how much to give them and so on. I've done my part. It's I gave at the office mentality, right? I did my thing. And yet when the Good Samaritan helped his neighbor there in Luke chapter 10, he didn't go to the synagogue and ask for funds for this guy that was laying by the side of the road. Right? He took out of his own money and he helped this person in need. He didn't wait for church benevolence. And when Paul and others agreed to remember the poor, they were making a personal commitment. They were not establishing church policy. And in 1 John chapter 3, verse 17, when John says, "But whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him?" John did not say, "Just put a check in the plate and let the church feed him." What he said was, "You take care of that. If you see that need, and especially among your brethren, if you see that person in need, then you do your best to address that." The point here is that we have a group, as a group, do have a responsibility toward benevolence among our members. It's true. But you as a Christian have a private responsibility toward any Christian and even to those who are not Christians. You have that obligation or I can even say it as a privilege the poor doesn't mean only poor Christians, although those should be taken care of first. Doesn't that make sense? Why should we be going out into the unconverted world when we have poor among our own brethren? Let's take care of our poor first, and then we'll go out and share with others as well. Galatians 6, verse 10, Paul there says, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. Why? Because they're our spiritual family. Imagine you leaving your family at home to go take care of your neighbor in need, where the family at home is hungry and in need of clothing and in need of basic necessities. That doesn't make sense, does it? And neither would it make sense for us to go out into the unbelieving world and take care of those people when we have neglected our own spiritual family, is really what Paul is getting at. But the poor is not limited to Christians. And remember the Good Samaritan, that he was one who took care of someone who wasn't even in his group, if you will. In other words, whoever is in your need of your mercy and your compassion is eligible for your benevolence in whatever form you want to give it. I'm going to take a little rabbit trail here for a minute because I think it's important to clarify something on this point. Some misunderstand what is required. We're being fed. Actually, I'm going to say we're having crammed down our throat anyway, this concept of socialism today. I know we're supposed to be Americans and we're a democratic nation and everything, but what you're seeing happening in our land and in our government is really socialism more and more. And one of the things of socialism is the redistribution of wealth, making it almost, nobody's going to say it out loud, but it's almost a crime if you have something more than someone else. And what you need to do if you have more than someone else is to give what you have to someone else until everyone has the same amount. Which, by the way, is a utopian idea that will never happen, and even if it happened for a moment, it would disintegrate immediately thereafter. Because if you gave all the money to the poor in this land and equaled it all out, I guarantee you, within a few years, the poor would still be there and the rich would still be there. Because there's a mentality going on, more than just the mechanics of, handing out money. The Word of God never instructs all those who have wealth to give it all to those who don't have wealth, unless, of course, there is a stipulation here, it is your wealth that stands in the way of your fellowship with God. Then you should give that away. And we have an example of that in Matthew chapter 19, verse 21. Here's a rich young ruler who comes to Jesus and says, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus says, "Well, keep the commandments." "Well, I've done all that. What else is there? Am I lacking anything?" And Jesus says, "Yeah, here's what you lack. Your money's standing in your way." And that's why he tells him to give rid of your money and come follow me. Give your money to the poor. Follow me and you'll have treasures in heaven. Because that's what was lacking. But in another account, Luke chapter 19, verse 8, we have Zacchaeus who was under no obligation to give any of his money, was not told by Jesus to give any of his money away, but comes voluntarily and says, "I'm going to give half of everything I have to the poor." So which is it? Do we give half? Do we give all? Do we give none? Which is it? It depends on the situation. First of all, what's standing in your way between you and God, and then secondly, what's in your heart? We do have another occasion in Acts chapter 5 and verse 4 where Ananias and Sapphira were trying to deceive the apostles with regard to how much money they actually made on the sale of some land because they laid money at the apostles' feet and made it very clear that this is all the money that we made on this sale. And Peter confronts Ananias up front, here at first anyway, and says, is that true? In other words, it wasn't the crime that you withheld some of the money for yourself and only gave part of it. The crime was that you lied about the situation. But Peter actually says in that verse, while the land was yours and while the money was yours that you from which you sold the land, while it was in your possession, was it not your own? In other words, it's yours to do with as you choose. It wasn't a crime to have either the land or the money from it. The crime is that you lied about what you did. So let's understand what we're not saying here. God never asks us to divest ourselves of all of our wealth or to give everything away. That's not what's really happening. On the other hand, and I want to balance out this idea here by considering 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Turn with me, if you will, to that passage here and see what Paul says on this point. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, starting in verse 13. And Paul is talking specifically about a financial contribution that the Corinthians promised to give to the needy, needy Christians, that is, who are in Jerusalem and Judea. And he says in verse 13, "For this contribution is not for the ease of others and for your affliction, but by way of equality, that at this present time your abundance being a supply for their need, so that their abundance may also become a supply for your need, that there may be an equality. As it is written, he who gathered much did not have too much, and he who gathered little had no lack." So understand that Paul is talking about a very specific situation here. And this is a reference to that needy situation in Jerusalem and Judea. God has blessed you so that you might bless them, is what he's saying. It's a win-win-win situation. They win, you win, God wins, because he is honored in the process. What he's not saying here is that you need to sell everything you have until everyone has the same amount. It's not what he's saying. But what he's saying is your surplus will be for the benefit of someone else's in a time of need. And by the way, the people being given to are Christians, not the poor in general. And that was based on the Corinthians' own voluntary offering and a specific need, not for everything being equal from now on. Oh, you've got a little bit too much. You've got an extra $50. You need to give some of that to me because I'm short 50. Okay? Or I'm short what you have. You've got more than me. We need to split that so that you have exactly what I have and vice versa. That's nonsense. That's what socialism teaches, and that's what's being crammed down your throat through some of our government policies. That's another situation. But that's not Christianity, and that's not what we're being taught. And this is similar to our requests for foreign missionaries, disaster relief among Christians, special requests from individual Christians for, say, medical procedures, desperate situations, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? In other words, it's not a church policy that Paul is promoting here. I want to make that very clear, what's not happening as well as what is happening. Now let's address the other part of our lesson, and that is, how are we to remember the poor? There's not a lot to say on this, really, because a lot of it is left up to you. I will say a couple things, though. First of all, whatever you do in remembering the poor has to be biblical. It has to be right. It can't violate your conscience, and it can't violate Scripture. If you violate your conscience and or Scripture, well, then you're doing what's wrong, not what's right. So it has to be biblical in that sense, right? And so you can't be endorsing sin in your remembering the poor. You can't be endorsing moral irresponsibility in remembering the poor. And that gets into my next week's lesson more than this one. But your remembering the poor has to also be appropriate. It can't be something where you're doing it for your own attention. That is, like Jesus said in Matthew 6, sounding a trumpet when you give alms. I'm remembering the poor! Is anybody looking? You know, maybe get a snapshot of that, post it on your Facebook of you handing someone a Safeway card or a turkey or something like that. I mean, that's not what it's all about, because then you're doing it for all the wrong reasons. And also, what is appropriate is not making the poor feel badly for being poor. In other words, respect their human dignity. And do this discreetly and not draw attention to the fact that they are in need. Like, brother so-and-so, you're in need. Come up here. I want to tell everyone how in need you are, how desperately poor you are, so we can give you a gift to make us all feel better. I mean, you can imagine something like that where that brother's going to want to come up there, right, and say, yeah, I want to advertise the fact that I am in this impoverished situation. I wouldn't think so. And also, I think, remembering the poor has to be done with good stewardship on your part. Again, more on this in the next lesson next week. But the fact is, if you can't pay your bills, can't pay your own debts because you donated all your money to the poor, that doesn't speak very highly of your stewardship. You just don't get it, in other words. And honestly, there are Christians that I know who have actually done this very thing, who are so giving and generous that they want to help everyone anytime they get any money in their pocket at all. Okay, I appreciate that spirit, but the fact is, you know, we're also told to be good stewards of our resources, aren't we? So you're crossing a line there. Someone has well said, I have part of the quote up here, one way to help the poor is to live in such a way so as not to become one of them. That's not a Bible statement, but it certainly is biblical in nature. In other words, it mirrors exactly what we are told. That's wise and practical, and I think that you would do well to take that into consideration. And I should say on this lesson, too, not all benevolence has to be in the form of money or cash, that is. Not everyone handles cash very well, for one thing. And sometimes people get poor because they haven't handled cash very well. Sometimes they need other things. Sometimes food is what they really need, and so provide that which they need. Sometimes it's clothing. Sometimes it's help with a car or their home repairs or helping needing help to get a job or something like that, or providing a place to stay or providing transportation. In other words, I think it would be wise for us to address the need and not just throw money at people and say, well, I did my thing. I remembered the poor. I think we need to be wise and good stewards in addressing those needs directly. If nothing else, if you have nothing physical to help someone with, I think the least you can do, and I mean this kind of facetiously because it's a really important thing, the least you can do is pray for them, that someone will help them, and that you are supporting that, and that you're asking God to bring that person who has those needs to this person who is in need, and you're participating in the process in whatever way you can. Again, I want to be clear. I'm not here to tell you exactly what to do. I am here to tell you that God expects you to remember the poor, not to close your heart to them, and not to live a self-absorbed life. And that's really hard because we live in an affluent, materialistic, self-centered society. I don't know if you've noticed that. Maybe you didn't. And it's easy for all that affluence and that materialism and that self-absorption to rub off on us and for us to internalize that without us even noticing or realizing it. And yet, despite all appearances, our society is a pyramid. You know that, right? Those with the least amount of money, provisions, and privileges are always at the bottom. And those with all the wealth are at the top. And most of us, I could probably safely say in this room, are somewhere in the middle to the bottom range. In other words, we're not the upper class, we're not the wealthy, but we're not impoverished either, but we're somewhere in between that lower part of the pyramid. And that's the way it usually is. If you look at human history, throughout all of human history, that's usually the way that it is. And regardless of that, what God is asking you and I to do is to take time to look beyond our own situation, because there are others suffering for want of food and clothing and the basic necessities, and God may well have blessed you in order to bless them. Remember what Jesus said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. That really ought to be a defining statement of the Christian life. That'd be a defining statement of our core Christian beliefs. And God will be generous to those who first demonstrate themselves as generous to others. And I don't mean that he's going to give all that generosity to you all in this life, but he will compensate you for whatever losses you incur by helping others. On the other hand, he will measure out to those who are unsympathetic and uncompassionate in proportion to what they gave to others, if indeed it was nothing at all. And once again, as the theme of this particular lesson, it's not my job or even my desire to tell you what to do with your time or your money, but it is your moral responsibility to use whatever blessings God has given you for his glory by giving to those who are in need. I hope this lesson has done well to at least bring to your attention the subject matter, and then you do with that what you will. This has not been a lesson to encourage you to become a believer, although we want people to be believers, and we want people to become Christians, and you can do so by being baptized into Christ. And if you are ready to do that this morning, or if you have any other spiritual requests or need that we can help you through our prayers and encouragement, well, this will be a time for you to respond by coming forward if you need to, as we stand and sing the song that Jeff has selected for us.